Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of the HYM podcast. This week I'm joined by, well, a couple of Brummies, but in the hosting chair with me this week is Jake, because the other one is battling around the Nordschleife. So Nick's been at the 24, but yeah, me and Jake, and Jake's back on home soil. So welcome home, Jake.
After a month, mate. It's went away for a 5-day trip to Monaco FE and ended up staying out for nearly 5 weeks over in Germany. So yeah, good to be back. Actually saw Nick out there before the 24.
Yes.
So yeah, spent about.
Unfortunately, Jake had to spend his birthday out in Germany, which wasn't planned, but I think Nick made it a bit of a nice day for him. So
Nick ruined it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just completely ruined.
No, we had a. Yeah, exactly. Couldn't. As soon as I saw his face, mate. But I had a quick catch up with Nick. It's been a while since I've seen him as well. And then he was off to 24, where he put it on pole for like 2.5-3 seconds in the monsoon conditions. So he's looking good with BMW right now. Unfortunately, he had to retire for a few hours to go with an engine failure. But yeah, I think he's doing a good job at the moment.
Yeah, but the sister car finished in second today. So. And they were ahead before the mechanical, so it would have looked good for the end for them.
But he won it last year, obviously, and put it on pole this year. Sister car finished podium, so pretty good all round, I'd say.
Pretty good. But we'll when Nick's back from his trip, and he's got a race coming up next weekend as well in Red Bull Ring with GT Masters. So Nick will be back in the next few weeks, and we can fully debrief with him on the 24. Yeah. But who we got on today, Jake?
Well, yeah, filling Nick's spot as the three of us chatting would be 2016 Formula 4 champion, 2018 Formula Renault Eurocup champion, and future all-round top streamer is Max Future. How are you doing, sir?
Lovely. Welcome there. Not heard those titles for a while. Feels like a long time ago I won those. Especially with how the last year racing went, it was definitely a lot tougher than how those years went. So, yeah.
Mate, yeah. You're talking to somebody who feels like it's been a decade since he's won his championship. So,
yeah, I know.
Get how you feel.
Yeah. Similar places. I'm just at home at the minute. Just trying to enjoy life this year that I've got off of racing. I think obviously I'll start probably trying to get things together towards the end of the year for next season. And obviously that my plan is sort of race as a career. So I'm not retired at all. Just having a year off. So I'm just enjoying that. Playing a lot of golf. So really feeling like I'm retired at the moment, but I'm enjoying it. I'm just getting my head into a good place and just getting prepared for whatever the next step in my career is, to be honest.
Yeah, mate. I mean, I think it's been a bit of a weird 2 years, really, if you include last year as a year for everybody. I mean, even I'm sort of in a similar, I've been to a racetrack a few times this year, but I haven't raced myself like you since September last year. So it's tough. It's tough, yeah. But I haven't been able to get on the golf course quite as much as you, though. Your handicap's pretty good right now.
It's coming down. I haven't even got an official handicap at the moment, but yesterday I just played 9 holes and I think I shot 4 over, so if I did that on another 9 it'd probably be 8, so that's all right. But again, again I need to probably score properly and not use an extra ball, so we'll see how it goes. But I'm really enjoying it because it kind of takes my mind away from everything and it's something to focus on and get better at while I'm not doing anything. Otherwise I would literally just be sat at home doing absolutely nothing, so it's kind of saved me in a way, to be honest.
Yeah, but it's quite tough, isn't it, really, to sort of, I suppose it's the first time, since you would have been pre-karting, where you would have had to have a year off racing, I bet.
Mm. Yeah, it's a really strange feeling. It's like since I started racing, 2009, and then 2010, started doing it properly, like pretty much every month going away, you know what it's like, traveling and moved to Europe, end of 2012, been flat out since then, through karting all the ranks, and then through the junior formula categories, and never had a year off racing, so this feeling is pretty alien to me. It was weird to process it all at the start of how I'm not racing and feel like my career's done and everything was just a nightmare, but after sitting back and realizing it's not the end of it all. There's a lot of forms of motorsport out there, and there's a lot of opportunities for me to grab. So I'm in a much better place mentally now to compare to the start of the year or the end of last season, where I just thought it was just completely all over disaster.
Yeah, but kind of from the outside, sort of looking in, I mean, I remember, I think you pulled out the championship pre-Spa, right?
Yeah, it was after Barcelona.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it was a bit of a shock to me. So I can only imagine that that came as a bit of a surprise to you as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously me and the team, it wasn't really working. The guys there were great. I was good friends with everyone in the team, but I just don't think we gelled together. We didn't make it work. We just didn't have the pace. And it was kind of a snowball effect from the first race, to be honest, and just getting worse and worse. My confidence was going down. And then in the end, I think it was obviously a mix of me and the team not having pace and just overall me driving with no confidence. It was just this big snowball effect, and it was just horrible place to be. And I felt like I was just in this downward spiral, and there was no getting out of it in the end. And just everything I was doing was just wrong. And yeah, like I could do a lap that I thought was good and I'd be 9/10 off. And I've never been 9/10 off in my whole life previously to that year. So it was definitely a big shock to me the whole season.
Yeah, I mean, we've spoke to a few guys who obviously come from the F-ready paddocks, let's call them, with F2 and F3. And a few of them had that sort of kind of year or period of a season, me included. I mean, in 2018, I went through a similar period to you that you did last year when I was with ART. And it's horrible because you have no feeling whatsoever. It feels like the balance can be fine. You say, you feel like you've done a good lap, probably just not making the tyre work. You've got just not the same level of grip as anybody else. And then with teammates, I mean, I had Antoine, Callum, Maz, all doing a really good job. And you've got the engineers and the team telling you, you've got to do this, but you're saying you're trying to do that and it's just not working. You just don't get answers. You can't go testing. Yeah. And like you say, it's just a snowball. So I really do get where you're coming from with that.
Yeah. It's just not a nice place to be. And obviously you get you get the practice the next weekend. You get four push laps before quali sometimes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just really hard to build the momentum back, especially when you're in such a low place. That's just the brutal side of it, I guess. And it's just, I don't wish that upon any other driver, to be honest, to go through a season like that. It is horrible.
Yeah, exactly. Would you mind me asking, saying what sort of brought the season to an end? Was it just like, you know, there wasn't not much point maybe spending the rest of the money?
It was around, I entered that season, I needed to be top three or win to move up to F2. And at the point I was at in the season, there was no sign of that happening. It was already over. And I didn't want to just do the season just to compete and be on track. I was obviously there to win. And I just thought I'd be better off. I'm just going to kill my confidence even more if I carried on, to be honest. So I just stopped there and put an end to it and just kind of got away from it all to focus on myself and get this my confidence and my head back in a place that I was, say, in 2018, where I was performing well and driving how I should, you know. So it was a mixture of the cost plus I'm not in a position where I'm going to go up anyway because the results aren't there, so there was just no benefit to me finishing off the season, to be honest.
I completely understand that, mate. I mean, obviously being with the F1 team as well, with Renault, I imagine there's always conversations going on about what's going to happen in the future. And that's looming over you all the time if you're in a bad run of form or whatever. Yeah. I mean, how do they sort of help you through that sort of situation?
To be honest, Renault were really good. So Mia that we had at the track and the trainer Matt, they were always very supportive of me. I knew throughout the season that obviously if the results weren't there, I'm not going to continue. That's just part of the sport and part of it. So that wasn't really affecting me. I was accepting that was going to happen. And you can't blame them because when the results aren't there, they can't put me through to F2 if I've finished not even in the top 10 in the championship. So, but yeah, Mia was really helpful at the track and supportive. And they've always been great to me, to be honest, Renault. I haven't got anything bad to say from when they picked me up after F4 through Euro Cup and F3. They've been very good.
Well, I mean, you've always really delivered, I guess.
Yeah, normally.
Until that point. So that they have no reason, I guess, really to doubt that it was anything to do with you. I guess they're just trying to help you through it and try to get you to gel with the team better.
Yeah, they knew what I was capable of. They've seen it in previous years. So it was just a tough year, even for them to see me, because we all got along very well and I've been with them a few years at that point. So it just wasn't nice. The whole year was just not fun. Especially my dream of racing in F1 and whatever comes to an end. And it's a horrible reality, really.
Yeah. Was there any talk about doing an extra year in F3 with maybe a different team?
I mean, I had the option this year with a few teams, but there's no value for me to do F3 again. I mean, if I was going to do any series, it'd be F2, but all the seats were obviously taken at the point I decided to stop and everything. So, I just need this year to kind of get everything together for next season.
Yeah.
The F3, there's no value to me do that again, to be honest.
No, I kind of get where you're coming from with that. I mean, even I kind of pulled out of F3 at the end of 2018 in my mind and didn't want to go back to it at all. I wanted to go to GT racing. And it was only the fact that there was a sort of progression for my career with a big company like HWA, which we hopefully would move across into something else if I did a good job.
Yeah.
Which is ended up what's happening. But you have to think a bit outside the box with these things. Yeah.
For me, that,
understand where you're coming from.
That other side of it with a team progressing into another series, whatever, wasn't there for me. So there's no real value. Because I think in F3, you need to be with the top team. Otherwise,
top team.
Yeah. It's a tough championship. It's a tough championship otherwise. I think F2 is very good. There's a few teams that are very fast. I think it's a bit more equal, but you know what it's like in them paddocks. It's pretty tough. Tough environment.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, I always, there's so many times, especially even at the start of last year with HWA, where we were a bit lost ourselves and we sort of managed to turn it around at some point. But I remember the start of the year thinking, what the hell is, like, I'm 5 or 6 tenths off in quali or something like that. I'm thinking, that paddock is a great lap. And then at the end of the year, you're doing a crap, well, in theory, what feels like a crap lap, but you're getting the tyres working.
Yeah.
And it just, and you were still sometimes most of the time behind Prema. And then I went to do the 1F2 race with HWA. And I was like 7, 8, 9 tenths off on the first run of quali with a team that hadn't done really anything to that point.
Yeah.
I think I kind of understand what you're saying. F2 for sure seems like you can impact it a bit more from just the qualifying formula, let's say, with what F3 seems to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no pit stops in F3, so nothing really changes. And F2, you watch it, there doesn't seem to be one team that are just completely pulling away. Each week, there's a different team winning, so it's a much better environment, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So let's bring it back a little bit to how you got started and a little bit of the more positive side of your career. definitely, because you've had a lot of it. So how did you kind of get into it? I mean, we asked that to everyone, really. But, I mean, obviously, karting is where everyone most seems to start. So how did that come about for you?
Yeah, I was in karting. But so I used to live in Singapore. I grew up there for 8 or 9 years. And I just went rental karting with a few friends after school. And I just fell in love with just driving. I always loved cars at that point anyway, having Hot Wheels or whatever, you know, as a lot of people do. But I just did karting. And then every day after school, I just keep asking my dad, can we go back? Can we go back? And we did. And then I joined some small team in Malaysia. And I did my first ever race over in Kuala Lumpur. It was in the karting track at Sepang, actually. So it's like,
where is that?
It's literally right below the F1 track. It's right next to it in Sepang.
I must have seen that.
I'm sure you've seen it.
Is it on the outside of the grandstand by the entrance?
Yeah, it's just next to the track.
Yeah.
So I did my first race there, and just that's how it started. I got into it.
Yeah, I suppose.
And I did the Asian Karting Championship in 2010. So that was the first championship I did. And I won my first ever race on round one of that in the Philippines, I believe. Then I won the Asian Championship in 2010. And then I started racing in Europe in 2011 in mini kart and just progressed through the ranks there.
I actually knew you'd lived in Singapore at some point. I actually didn't know that you'd started your karting career effectively over there. So what's the community like there? Is it big?
It's really nice, actually. It's pretty chilled. It's not like Europe where you have to spend loads and it's super intense and it's the World Championship, European Championship. It was quite nice when I started because everyone in the paddock was friends and the racing was still good. And actually, my first ever teammate was Jayan Dharavala. We were teammates back in 2010 there in Malaysia, which was mental. I didn't know who he was until we crossed paths when we were teammates in Ricky Flynn Motorsport in 2013. And I was like, oh my God, it's you. How are you doing, mate?
I've seen you before.
Yeah. But I never spoke to him when we were teammates in Malaysia. It was so strange. He was just like under the same tent as me, I guess. And then Now we were teammates in Ricky Flynn and he's racing in F2. And yeah, he's come a long way together, I guess.
Was that off the back of that old Racing Point, Force India, like talent thing you did?
Yeah, he was in that, in Ricky Flynn. Yeah, he had the Force India decals on.
So this was already, when you met him, it was before that?
I met him before that, yeah, in 2010, like years ago. He had nothing. He was driving around this go-kart with no stickers on it, anything, just white lid, just fully sending it around.
Oh, poor Billy.
Yeah, proper Billy, yeah.
So how did you kind of like, you know, go from being there to saying, well, okay, you know, we need to take this seriously effectively and go over to Europe with a good team like Ricky's and sort of say, well, yeah. Because I never raced in Europe with karting, but I just sort of imagine that if you go down that route, you're taking it seriously, you want to make something of it.
Yeah, so it was the end of the Asian Championship in 2010. So it was the final round. I just won the championship and I met Gary Catt in Macau. And he was telling us about all the racing in Europe and how it's like much higher level over there. And then in 2011, I joined Baby Race, is it? The Lorandis, it's their dad's team. So I started doing mini kart over in Italy, doing all the races, but I was flying back and forth from Singapore. And we had a few good results. We were fast, had a podium here and there. And I thought, yeah, we've got to take this seriously. We need to move to Europe, obviously, because I can't fly 12 hours each time for a race weekend. It's just ridiculous. Mm. And I think my family were going to move back anyway around this time, so it kind of worked okay. So my parents and my little brother, we all moved back to the UK 2012. And yeah, I joined Ricky Flynn for 2013, and that's when the proper Europe campaign started, really. And I just started taking it serious, did all the WSKs, European Championships. But yeah. My karting career, I think I wish I took it a bit more serious, to be honest, off the track. Obviously, when you're so young, you don't really realize, but I didn't do much training for the karting. And I think if I did just have that edge, like a bit more seriousness, I think I would have probably won a few more championships here and there. Like I was always really fast, could win the race weekend here and there. You know, karting, it's sometimes a gamble if you make turn one or not. But yeah. Yeah, I was always had the pace and that's what kept me in it. We knew I was fast, so that was always the motivation. I just probably should have taken it a bit more serious off the track.
I mean, I kind of have the opinion with karting that there's a bit of a fine line between taking it serious, because obviously it helps if you win. So if you win the likes of European Championships and the World Cup or whatever, you're already earmarked effectively by quite often F1 teams before you even set foot in a Formula 4 car or something.
Yeah.
So that's important, but I think there's quite a fine line between, you know, doing that and sacrificing everything else when you're a kid, effectively. I mean, I never had it. I only started when I was 16. And I think in many ways, I look back and go, well, I wonder if I'd started earlier, actually, I don't think I would have made it to car racing for various reasons. One being probably money, but also probably not taking time out of school and things like that. It doesn't work for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I kind of hear where you're coming from, but I think I have the opinion that, you know, young kids should be, and teenagers should be kids and should be doing it to enjoy it. And it is a fine margin. You see so many people like dads, you know, trying to live their lives through their sons, I think.
Yeah, it's always tough to see. And the kid just doesn't want to be there and the dad's going crazy at them. That's always just, no fun for anyone, to be honest. No, and the dad's spending a load of money, so.
Well, he's happy.
Yeah. But when I look back at the karting days now, it was so good. I miss that kind of racing where all us teammates, we're all good friends. There's no bad blood on track. There's no serious pressure of anything. And we were just traveling around Europe racing go-karts. And it's pretty mental when you think back at it.
It's every boy's dream, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Like even nowadays, every girl's dream.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So I want to ask a quick question. I mean, like I said, I already knew you lived in Singapore, but I guess a lot of people wouldn't know that. So you grew up, or for you were born near and lived where I live, I think. So you're from a town called Sutton Coldfield, I think you said earlier. I was actually there this morning.
It's on my passport.
It's
on my passport where I was born, Sutton Coldfield.
Is it? Yeah. No way.
It is.
Oh, so you're technically a Brummy still at heart.
I'm a Brummy at heart, yeah. I just don't have the accent. I can't really... If I say to someone I'm a Brummy, they're like, I have a day off.
Yeah. What are you on about? You don't have my accent, mate.
No.
So how did you kind of... What happened? I don't want to pry, obviously, if it's personal, but how did you kind of come about as a family kind of going out to Singapore?
All to do with my dad's work. So we all lived in Birmingham for like the first year or 2 years. I can't honestly remember because I was like 1 year old. But he then started doing business over in Malaysia for like a year or so, and then moved to Singapore and started his business there. So then we all just moved with him to Singapore. And I just only ever remember growing up there. I never grew up in the UK. And then obviously, as with the karting, we moved back in 2012. So I lived there for a good chunk. It's a pretty amazing place, to be honest. I do miss it when I'm back in the UK now in the winter. It's pretty cold, but
I've never been to Singapore. Been to Kuala Lumpur a few times, but I heard it's pretty mega.
No, it is awesome. I mean, I've never been out or anything there, so I don't know about the nightlife, but it is awesome.
Did you ever go to the race?
Yeah, that's where I watched the 2008 Singapore Grand Prix. And that's before I even did go-karting. And that is kind of also what made me want to go-karting. I should have probably mentioned that earlier. It's probably quite a big part of the story. I just remember going out onto the grandstand or whatever and just seeing Lewis and the chrome car with the yellow helmet scream past. And I was just like, that is exactly what I want to do.
Yeah.
Like the feeling when I first ever heard the F1 car was just ridiculous. Can't explain that.
Wasn't that quite a famous race as well?
Yeah,
for a few reasons.
Yeah.
That is one thing I've probably not... I can talk about it now, but I used to not be able to with Renault, so...
Of course.
That's quite a nice irony, isn't it?
Yeah.
Quite full circle.
Yeah, I wasn't not allowed to talk about that.
Yeah, I wonder why.
If you don't know what we're talking about, go YouTube it.
Yeah,
I think if anyone's listened to our podcast, I think they probably know what happened in 2008.
I think they do, to be fair. Yeah.
At this point, you're following us, and we really appreciate it. But you've got to like motorsport to know of us right now.
Just I watched the first race there, and it was just amazing. I remember getting out the taxi and the car coming past the straight, but all the fences were boarded up, so you can't obviously watch. And the sound just blew me away. And I just fell in love since then. The whole weekend was just amazing for me.
I never got to experience, I don't think, at the track. Because I've never watched an F1 race like live, apart from when I raced in GP3.
Yeah.
And it was already the turbo.
Already hybrid, yeah. They're unbelievable. It's ridiculous.
Mm. I've never heard them like...
Actually,
the only time... I'll tell a lie. The only time I did, I think it was... Ollie Rowland was doing a demo at World Series race in a Red Bull.
Yeah.
But I don't remember it that well. But yeah, I'm on the street track of Singapore, echoing off the bridges and stuff.
Oh, through the city at night with the chrome McLaren reflecting in the lights. That was just a dream to me. It's awesome.
Yeah. So you did obviously karting with Ricky. You must have had a few, obviously you mentioned JM, you must have had a couple of other good sort of well-known teammates at that point.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, Inam, else? Logan Sargent, Yuri, who had a great weekend. Like I'm going to forget someone. Dan Ticktum. And also Lando Norris, who obviously everyone knows if they're watching this.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe they don't.
No, yeah. Sure. He races for McLaren at the minute. He's doing all right, to be fair.
Yeah, I think he's doing quite a decent job, to be fair. Lando's a good lad. I was teammates with him once or twice. Only had two races, but yeah, I think he did quite well in karting, didn't he, around that time?
Yeah, he was doing really well. He was winning a lot of stuff, to be fair to him. He was very fast. Yeah. It helped because when we were in karting, he was so small. Like, they'd have to Velcro him in the go-kart. But when it was really rubbered up, he'd be so fast. And when I say Velcro, I'm serious, yeah.
Velcro?
Yeah, like, for one of the races... Yeah, because he had so much lead in, they had to stick him in. That's a true story, I promise.
What, like put Velcro strips
on the back of the seat and the back of his suit, yeah.
Why? I don't get it. What was the need?
Because it was so rubbered up, and when he turned in, he'd nearly fall out the go-kart because it was so bouncy. And he was so light, so it would just send him out. He did actually fall out that weekend in the end.
Did he?
With the Velcro, yeah.
I was just going to say, surely that has to have nearly happened or actually happened to realise you needed to do to do that.
Yeah. That's a funny story.
He was tiny, to be fair.
Yeah.
I mean, and then you went into Formula Force directly from there, didn't you?
Yeah, so I stopped karting probably halfway through 2015. So I did a 2 or 3 senior races in KF. Finished second in my first of one, actually, against, who was first? Carol Baz. So he was like Tony Kart factory driver.
I designed my first ever helmet based off him.
His stuff always looks good, doesn't it? I've never seen someone look better in a go-kart than him. Always looks good. Nice.
You know the phrase, he looked Euro.
He is Euro. Like
that, yeah. Yeah.
That is
him. He was the definition of it.
Hmm.
And you went in with Carlin, didn't you?
Yeah, so I stopped halfway through, did some testing before the F4 season and, went in with Carlin first year, 2016, and won the title. And, it went really well. Went perfectly, to be honest. I think all the preparation with the team were good and they were so professional, Carlin, especially even for F4 level. I think that's why they've been so successful in F4, and obviously everything they do take it really seriously. So that helped a lot, for sure.
Yeah. And that would have been their second championship.
Yeah, they won with Lando the year before and then with me. And then I don't know who else after. Who was after me? Caroline?
I'm asking questions.
I think it was Jamie Caroline, yeah.
Yeah, it might have been.
Then the rest, I don't know. But they do good in that championship. Yeah, they're the good team. Which also always helps in junior racing.
Carlin is superb, pretty much. Everything they do, aren't they? I mean, it seems like sometimes only current F3, they seem to have a little bit of not a handle on it, but you could argue for many reasons what that is. But I raced with Trevor a few times. Actually, it's the only time I was teammates with Lando, and really enjoyed it. I learned a lot. So
completely
get how you had a good year with them. But off the back of that, I think you mentioned it earlier, didn't you? That's when you got Renault.
I met with Renault probably 3 rounds before the end of the F4, and I had a meeting, and they said, if you win the championship, we'll take you onto our academy. So I was like 16. I was like, oh my God, this is mental. F1 team have just told me I can join them if I win. So I didn't actually feel that as pressure. It just kind of motivated me even more. And even I had conversations with my dad. It was like, if I didn't win the title this year, I can't really continue. So it was kind of a must win season for me. And we did go on to win it in the last race. I had to win the race to win the title. I was starting pole, so I just led every lap. I don't even remember the race. I was that focused. Like, if the team asked me about the car, I probably couldn't give any feedback because I just zoned out the whole time. But yeah, it was good. Yeah. It was a really good year.
Who did you beat to win that?
Was it Fielding? Senan Fielding? But he was like a lot older than me at that point, so he was very experienced.
It was like me in F3.
Yeah. I think he was three or so more years older than me doing F4. So no, it was good though. It was good to have a rival that was a lot more experienced. Made it quite rewarding.
Yeah. Yeah. But as you say though, like with the Renault thing, I mean, I've not had that personally, but that must be pretty special, like feeling to sort of say, well, I mean, because I've always said that I don't know how I would be without, you know, getting F1 junior program, but I think as you kind of said earlier, I always thought it'd be just positive pressure, because the biggest thing we kind of have as guys trying to make it is the you know, we understand you need to succeed, you need to win, you need to get the results, but it's to have the path there that if you do that, somebody provides it for you. And so I guess to have that sort of laid out in front of you to say, if you do this, you've got a chance, basically. That must be really cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. They do show you the path and what the progression will be, and it's all in paper, and it is pretty exciting when you see it all, that the door is open. And yeah, everything was just positive. They helped with off track. They got all my race kit, training camps, training at the factory, learning about how all the team works, simulator. And it was just all round helped me become a lot better as an overall driver off the track as well. So yeah, I think if any driver can get onto an academy, I would recommend it for sure. It's definitely a yeah. massive benefit for a lot of reasons.
Yeah. So yeah. So as you kind of said, you think, obviously not saying for everyone, but you would say that probably having that support is all positive. There's a lot of things that you would say help you along the way as a junior F1 driver.
Yeah, for sure. Because, and also even the little media days you do, you never know who you're going to meet and connected with Renault at Renault events and stuff like that. So there's just so many little things that do just benefit you rather than if you are just racing on your own. There's a lot of doors that can be opened.
Yeah, and you get to wear the suit.
Yeah, you get the suit.
That's and the main thing, mate.
And to be fair, they did give me some days in an F1 car, which were awesome. So I did a F1 show. This was all.
Yeah,
this,
I was going to touch on that with you.
Yeah, I'll do it now. I'll bring it up. So yeah, I did Goodwood, which was unbelievable. Going up the hill in the V8, that was just a surreal day. That's unbelievable. I can't even process it still. So that was a big thanks to them.
Yeah.
And then I did, me and Lungard, we did a few days out in France, kind of promoting the French GP. And we did like three or four different towns and we just go around the streets doing donuts in these towns. It was pretty awesome. And the last day I did a run and there was just thousands of people there. I was doing donuts. I was like, what am I doing? This is just unbelievable.
Yeah. Is that a nerve-wracking day?
I mean, it is literally the pavement and this like string and people. So while I'm wheel spinning, if I get this wrong, this is not going to really end well, to be honest. The donuts were the worst because it was such a tight space. And
yeah,
so I had one area to do donuts, which was the main bit with loads of people. That was okay because I could just drop the clutch, you know, and just keep it flat, whatever. It was easy. But when I go down the hill and I had to turn around, it was this tiny space. So I had to just make sure I drop the clutch and get the right power and just to snap the car around. Otherwise I'd crash. And that was the most nerve wracking because there's obviously loads of people watching. If I get it wrong,
it's also
embarrassing.
We've all seen the videos on social media of people that have got it wrong.
Exactly. I don't want to be on that compilation, to be honest. The best day was I got to test the 2017 F1 car.
Yeah.
Around Barcelona all to myself for the full day. And that was pretty cool. That was awesome. Yeah. It's like just the biggest thing that amazed me was honestly the braking, just ridiculous. It's like you hit the brakes into the hairpin or turn one, and it feels like someone is literally kicking you in the back of the head.
It's
the steering's a lot lighter than I thought as well. So.
I mean, I've always kind of heard physically that actually F2 is probably a bit harder, just on your neck, maybe. Obviously F1's a bit stronger, but everyone says that about the brakes, I'm pretty sure.
Ridiculous.
I mean, I can't speak from experience, but the engine is always the thing in every car that you get used to first, or the power. It's just kind of that brain, that sort of mental block on your brain initially of saying that, you know, how late can I brake and how early can I come off the brakes and trust the downforce without crashing or putting it in the wall. And you know, you are coming into most corners, I guess, at 320, 330 at Barcelona turn one.
The weirdest thing was having the tire warmers. So first session, first lap, out we go. I got a crawl round and then just push straight away with no warm-up laps or anything. And that was the hardest thing, to be honest. Because you've got to be on it straight away.
Yeah.
You literally push, cool, done. Like, it's all over in 3 minutes. It was just mental.
Well, I suppose you lose tire temperature, don't you, otherwise?
Yeah. And also on the in-lap, you have to kind of regen the battery while trying to cool the rears down. But to regen the battery, you need to go flat. So you're really battling the rear tires the whole time. So yeah, the F1 drivers do have a lot to think about. And obviously, I didn't do the full weekend procedure, so I can imagine it's even more complicated on a full race weekend.
How serious are those like private test days taken from a sort of like a procedure engineering point of view?
No, pretty serious. It is. Yeah. You have to do everything properly.
I suppose the purpose is also to teach you.
Yeah. To say if I'm jumping in for FP1 and stuff, I need to be ready. So it was all very serious. It wasn't just a fun day as a reward. Yeah. There was like 30 people there just for one car, so, and two big trucks. So yeah, it was a pretty serious operation.
I say Renault from an outside looking in, Renault probably one of the best at giving the juniors runs in F1 cars. I mean, it seems like Jose all the time at the moment.
Yeah, they are really good for that, to be honest. Like, to even get that one day was really cool. So, and you see the guys on the academy now are still getting days in the Alpine car now. So I think they're doing a mega job with that. I don't know any other junior teams that are doing test days for their drivers at the moment. Maybe Ferrari, but Ram Ferrano, is it called?
Mm.
I don't want to say that wrong. I'll get eaten by the Ferrari fans. Yeah, that's not
a few Marcus and Callum fans.
Yeah, that's not a full-blown track, though, is it? So I guess they can't get super high speed compared to Barcelona or whatever.
No, I don't. No, I think you had it good, mate, testing it at Barcelona, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
If I had a choice where to test an F1 car, it'd be Silverstone, probably then Barcelona or Spa-Barcelona. Yeah. So, yeah,
they would have loved to do Silverstone, but not complaining at all.
No, I don't think you should be, mate.
Can't complain at all, no.
Did that come after a prize from winning Formula Renault?
I think it was because I was at a certain place in the championship in F3, was it? At that point, I was doing all right. I think I just had a second in Austria or something, and I was in a certain target for the championship, so I got to do that day. Or I was second in Budapest. This was 2019, not last year, yeah.
It was Budapest, because I was on the podium with you.
Yeah.
It was Christian, you, me, I think.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Race one.
Yeah. My last podium.
Yeah. How did you find, was it?
I've not had a podium since then, no. That's a long time ago, isn't it? Jeez.
Yeah, I suppose it is for somebody that was very used to having them as well up until that point.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird. It is weird.
Yeah. But if we touch on that year itself in F3, obviously you joined ART. Was that a choice you had, or was it that's Renault's kind of like you and Christian were going to go there?
Yeah, it was a mixture of both. Obviously, at the time, we thought ART were the team to go to after seeing the previous years in GP3. Obviously, it moved to a new car, so it was always still a risk. No one knows how everyone's going to perform with the new car, but we thought ART was the best option, and I was very happy with it. And I got to have my engineer, Morgan, from Race GP from Euro Cup the year before, so I was super happy with that. It was just a bit of an up and down year, to be honest. It was some weekends I'd fight for the win, like Austria, Budapest. Pace was there, we're finishing P2, second race coming through to top four. And then some weekends we'd be one second off, like Paul Ricard. I did the best lap I felt ever. And they come over the radio saying I'm 1.2 off. And I was just like, that is not possible.
Yeah.
So but it was the first year of the championship, and it was very up and down for a lot of teams. So apart from Prema, who really nailed the first year, I really dominated it. But I wasn't too unhappy. I was top 10, and there's a few missed opportunities with DNFs here and there. But I knew I could race for the win because I'd had two podiums, two P2s. So I knew if I got it all together, the pace is there and the results would come. So the year after, I was kind of excited for, but
yeah,
it didn't really come together.
So how come you made, or where, how did the decision come about to change teams?
I just a few discussions with High Tech and what they were saying, how their progression was, because they had a good year. They were, I think, second in the constructors at that point.
I think they finished second.
So
is that Yuri's year?
Yeah. And Yuri had quite a few good races. And I thought, this is a good move. English team, you know, because I had been with a French team for a few years, which is not a problem, but it's just a bit of a change. And
we've asked a couple of the guys about that. Like, how did you find many differences between like the French team, the English team? What was your sort of like preference with it?
I honestly don't mind. I got along with the guys at Race GP really well. They were funny and kind of understood all the jokes and stuff. So I got along with those guys really well. ART, it was a bit harder with my mechanic to form a bit of a connection. It was still fine, but he didn't speak any English and I didn't speak any French. So it's kind of hard to have that bond that you do normally. And yeah, with the English team, obviously the mechanics are all good guys, so you can get along with them a lot easier. But also, I don't think that side of it affects my performance, to be honest, because I just like getting to the track, focus and do the job. So the joking around's not really a benefit or a loss to me. So it doesn't really bother me, whatever team I'm with. And to be honest, in high tech, a lot of the engineers were French, so it didn't make a big difference.
I know where you're coming from with the ART thing though. With like I struggled to do exactly the same thing the year before with like some mechanics, all really good guys. Really all a lot of respect for them, but it's just hard to manage, like you're saying, like that personal relationship. And it is a weird one with racing. It's like you don't need that, but it makes it easier. Or it makes it, let's say, I don't know, just in a better mindset. I think sometimes if you feel like you're enjoying it more, and that's nothing against a team or whatever. It's just some people suit teams more than others, or people more than others, I think.
Yeah, I think the year in Eurocup for me was a big thing. I just had such a great bond with everyone in the team, and the whole environment of the team was so positive. Because we'd go and do prep days on like a Tuesday, I'd fly to Paris and we'd spend the whole week and I'd travel with them. And we just became very close, and the whole process of the championship was just a lot more enjoyable. And we enjoyed working together and improving. And it was just a great bond that we all had. And I think that honestly helped us in the whole championship throughout the year. Even when we were having tough weekends, we'd all be close, so we just help us get along, you know, make the hard days a bit easier. And I think that was definitely a success.
I think that's something that the Prema do really well from the outside. I think that it's a really big family team. You know, every driver that comes in every year is encouraged to feel and you know, take part in being in that family.
Yeah.
And us against the world kind of atmosphere. I think that's something that they have that not many of us have in the paddock.
No, I think it's a massive thing. I know it sounds silly, but little things like that do make the world a difference, I think, in a sport where every little thing counts. So,
yeah, exactly. You need to work hard. You need to feel like it's, you know, you can't just mess about. It's not about that at all. It's not about anything we're saying, but any job in the world, you ask anybody if they're enjoying it, feeling like they're enjoying it, like even away from the office or away from the racetrack or whatever, they're going to be more happy to go into work and work even harder.
Yeah, 100%.
So I completely get all that, mate. I think your first taste of high tech though was Macau, wasn't it?
Yeah, so we did some testing before. The testing actually was in Valencia, I think. That went really well. We were all really quick in the dry and the wet. So I was like, it's going great. Like, I got along with the whole high tech team brilliantly. I just didn't work throughout the season for us. I think it was a bit me and the team, and then towards the end, obviously my head didn't help. Just that whole thing I mentioned earlier. We did Macau together first. That was a crazy experience. That track is just nuts. I'd love to have another go, to be honest, and really try and nail it this time round. So I crashed in practice, but I have a bit of a messy weekend, but I still really enjoyed the whole experience because that track is like nothing compares to it, I don't think.
Nah, mate. I've driven in a road car. I've driven the Nordschleife I mean, some people say Bathurst is pretty special. Honestly can't imagine ever driving a place, including driving, let's say, GT3 on the Nordschleife, that is feels more special than an F3 car in Macau. Don't think I'll ever feel it any better than that.
I wish I could have tried the older shape F3 around Macau, a bit lighter weight. That looks seriously fun. Because the new ones are so heavy and just don't like them.
Oh, mate, it was brilliant. It's like, obviously it wasn't as quick in the straight line. That's where the lap time difference came from, because the new car was like 4 or 5 seconds a lap quicker, I think, lap time wise, but didn't feel it. It's, you gained it all in the straight line or in the acceleration zones up the hill and things like that. But the actual, I mean, it's so light. It was like 570, 580 kilo with driver.
It's ridiculous.
You know, proper suspension on it, you know, proper aero for the size of the car. And it, you know, all those cambers in the road when you're getting sort of mentally up for pushing it to the limit and getting close to the wall and feeling where that limit is. Yeah. You get so much more feedback from it through the mountain section. Mm. It was brilliant, honestly. Absolutely. Yeah. I'd love to do it again. Unfortunately, I don't think we'll ever will.
No.
See that car.
No, I don't think so. Well, Talara have that new one they use for Euro Formula Open, is it? Something like that. That looks really good, but I don't know why they didn't use that, to be honest.
Well, Dan, I think Tictum has said that he that was one of his favourite cars, that one with the halo.
Said it was amazing, yeah. I remember him telling me as well.
Yeah, I think the problem is just that not enough teams own them, I guess.
No, and I don't think it suits the whole idea with Pirellis and degradation, to be honest.
Wow, I mean, if we talk about Pirellis on this day of all days.
Yeah. I think they speak for themselves, to be honest.
Yeah, we could get in trouble, I think. If
said, he's sitting on his little smug chair because he wants to say something about Pirelli every week.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just irks me. I don't know why.
I know what you mean.
We're forced to. You have to sign a waiver when you do F3 and F2 to say you can't speak bad about them.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, obviously today, whilst we're filming this for everyone, today is the day of the Baku F1 race, and obviously. I'm pretty sure everyone would have watched it and knows what we're talking about.
It's just so dangerous.
Yeah.
Especially in that place where they're going the fastest speed around the whole track. And if someone hits the wall and bounces back, it's just not acceptable, to be honest, for that to happen. I don't think.
No, I mean, when I saw the replay of Max's one, you see when he loses the left three, he goes to the right. But if you see, I mean, there is tech pro there, but if he goes to the left, I don't know if you know if you watch it back, that's going to be an enormous impact. I don't care how much tech pro you've got there.
No, it's huge.
I don't know what would have happened, do you?
Yeah, it's just not acceptable at this point in time, to be honest, for the tyres to be doing that. So
no, I mean they come out and said both instances were debris, and it's just you could copy and paste it every single time.
That's ridiculous.
So, yeah, obviously, you're not racing at the moment. I nearly said we're there, but I think we're sort of both in the same boat.
Yeah.
So I think I could say that. But we're not racing at the moment. Obviously, COVID's had such a big impact on everything, I think. I imagine you were probably a bit like me in a sense of trying to sort of look ahead to the future, plan for probably 2022 mainly, get some testing in, the odd races happening, especially towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
And then, you know, COVID is still here, and you're probably going to say what I'm about to say, but I've had a few chances to get out and testing in GT stuff, in sports car stuff, and the travel restrictions have stopped it.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not ideal. I'm still unsure of what path I'm going to take at the moment. I really want to weigh up my options, because I think this next move is vital, especially at my age and everything, to really make one more bit of impact with whatever I do to get a career out of it. So I need to make sure I do the right thing. And if it's America, GTs to Formula E or whatever it'll be, I need to make sure I'm really ready for it and I hit the ground running. So that's just my goal of this year, to be honest.
Yeah, I think GTs is kind of like the bread and butter of motorsport at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's something I'm really looking at. Outside of that, I think the two sort of main places, well, Indy's probably sort of the third one in this mix, but you see, Formula E is not probably what everyone would do outside of F1, unless they, you know, top team in IndyCar, maybe.
Yeah.
But for me, it's Formula E or WEC with a new hypercar.
LMDH, that looks really cool.
Yeah, I mean, you've got what, Porsche, Audi, Peugeot, Ferrari.
Everyone's getting involved in that. It's going to be huge, I think. It's going to be really cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I don't know how they're going to fit everyone on the grid.
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be chaos.
I mean, there's at least five manufacturers. There's probably, I heard, BMW going to come in. Every team like that wants to run a second car, or two cars minimum. Probably three. You know, you've got LMP2. You've got, they're probably in the future, ACO are going to have to change the GT3 regulations with GT, you know, losing its contract soon. And I actually think Le Mans World Endurance Championship is going to really kick off in the next sort of 3 or 4 years.
I think it will as well.
Yeah. Is that something you're looking at?
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely. I just want to do something that's at the top of its category, you know? Be that WEC, Formula E, Indy, GTs, just something that's the top level of motorsport. You know, that's what I want to do. I don't want to settle for anything less, because I do believe I'm capable of racing in series like that. So that's definitely the goal. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Getting paid to race at a top level.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, some people get almost like turn their nose up a little bit, I think, at GT stuff, but I think it looks mega.
Yeah, it's cool.
I mean, I think
when you're in this weekend, when you're stuck in that F3, F2 paddock, obviously you I don't want to do GT racing, no way. But when reality sets in, you realize how difficult it actually is to get into F1 nowadays. I'm not even going to go into it. But yeah, GT, it's not the end of the world. It's still an awesome lifestyle.
Go on, Alex.
I was going to say, I think it's hard to switch priorities almost, isn't it? As well, for people. Like, for me, it's like growing up, it was always, we're going to go MotoGP, you know, we're going to be a factory rider and all that. But I think when you come up against what it actually, you know, at the end of the day, big part of it's financial, isn't it? You realise, you know, that's not going to happen. And when you're presented with alternatives, you go, oh, that's actually not so bad. Get to do what we love doing, don't we?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, it's a classic case of, you know, normal life with supply and demand with F1 seats. It's just, you know, there's not enough supply for it, and there's a massive demand for it. And when you add money into the mix with an expensive sport like motorsport, it's inevitable.
It gets silly, doesn't it? Yeah, at the top, what they're offering.
I heard Hamilton come out the other day and say it was a billionaire boys' club, F1.
Not too far off. He's not too far off, is he?
No.
To be fair to him.
I think he's kind of, quite close to it with that one, actually.
It's getting close. I still think there's a lot of guys there that are on merit at the moment, but I think if they're still accepting to, obviously, recent drivers that have joined, it's only going to get worse. So they need to put their foot down somehow, I think.
Well, the cost cap, hopefully, you'd hope that might have a big impact on that.
Yeah.
If teams are not able to spend the money, they've got to spend it some way. If they're making money, they don't in theory need the money from the drivers. Not necessarily to say that they still won't take it. Yeah. But
you can't at the moment, you can't really blame the teams that are at the back struggling for budget when a driver offers a crazy amount of money. You can't really blame them for taking it. Obviously, it's not ideal, but they can't afford to take on a driver and pay him instead of being paid 30 million or whatever. So it's just a real bad situation I think they're in at the moment. And hopefully the cost cap will help this problem.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, something I want to also touch on just before we wrap it up is obviously you're streaming now, and you're getting quite the following, it seems.
Yeah.
So we just chatted off air just before we started, but it sounds like, and visually looks like, you're enjoying it quite a lot.
I mean, it's great. I started streaming, God, I don't even know now. 2019, end of 2019, kind of just near the end of the season of F3, I started streaming. Just from there, it's kind of grown, and I get 400, 500 people watch my stream now, which is just, it's still mental, to be honest. And it's still growing, and we've got a really nice community going on. I'm sure a few of them will be watching this. And it's just really nice, to be honest. I can kind of chat to them, whatever, even vent my anger with racing or whatever to them, and they all listen and support me, which is nice. Just to play games with my friends. Also, you do earn money from it as well, which is a benefit for me at the moment, obviously not racing and earning money myself. So it's just a lot of positives have come from it for me. I've built an audience, and that also will help me in my racing career, having a big following or whatever. It's something else I can use going towards manufacturers and stuff. So just all round positive from the streaming side of things. And I think it is the future for a lot of drivers. Obviously, Lando's been doing it, which I think is a great move from him, because it makes him a lot more accessible compared to a lot of the other F1 drivers. So, and I do think you'll see, as these younger generations come through and start racing and gaining a following, they'll start streaming as well. So it's definitely the future for sure.
It's only getting bigger, isn't it? I mean, gaming and streaming has been around for a while, but I wouldn't say that from a sporting point of view that there's not many like sports that get involved in it, really, is that you don't see like Premier League footballers doing it, cricketers, rugby players, but motorsport actually has quite a niche with this, I think.
Yeah.
You know, especially now that F1's getting, I think Drive to Survive's helped, and there's a lot of this sort of like online fan base now, Twitch.
Yeah, it's a lot younger fan base as well, which is good for the sport as well.
I mean, like F1 TikTok's huge, isn't it?
Yeah. It's massive. Nuts. I mean, you see, actually, when I remember having a look not that long ago, just because I was interested from like, yeah, just an interest point of view, Lando's engagement on his social media. And he's like, I think he's pretty much the most now in F1. And this is including Hamilton. And most of that will obviously come from his personality that people think they can, you know, have access to through his Twitch channel.
Yeah, I think Lando's really nailed it, to be honest, on the social media side of things. And he's gained a huge following, if for even how little he's been in F1. So, yeah. The power of it is immense, and I think it's only going to get bigger from here on out.
Yeah, well, I think it works. I think it's beneficial to both parties, really, because people want to see what people get up to behind their spare time, behind the scenes. They want to see, you know, how they chat with their friends, how they laugh, what they eat. And, you know, they can see you, watch you having a laugh with your friends who a lot of the time over racing drivers as well, which they watch on Sky or whatever. And that's a big thing. And for you, you get an audience that, you know, encourages you and is positive. It's free for you, I guess. I don't know. Maybe there's a membership to Twitch or whatever. I don't know. But
no, it's free to stream. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you get to fill your spare time as well.
It's been perfect for me, especially the year off from doing the streaming. And yeah, it's gone awesome, to be honest. And I think, yeah, with the drivers, because they're not very accessible, because when you go to a racetrack, you never see the drivers anyway, because they're locked away in the paddock and you'll only ever see them on track with a helmet on. So yeah, I think it's one of the sports, F1, where you don't really get to know the drivers very well, to be honest. You don't get a lot of access to them. So I think the streaming side of things is very good too.
I also think we're not far from point in professional racing where the audience that, you know, guys like you and whoever can have online starts to be a selling point.
Yeah, I think so as well. I completely agree with that. I wouldn't say I'm there yet, but I'm honestly not too far away from it being an actual benefit to my racing career as well now.
Yeah, I don't think you are, mate, to be fair. And it's only going to get bigger.
Yeah.
So it's going to snowball. It's not linear, is it?
No. It's just getting bigger and bigger. Even each month now, I'm starting to notice growth with the viewership and stuff, which is great. So, yeah. It's been a real, real good thing I've done, I think.
Yeah, I've been doing a good job, mate. I think you just stick at it as well, see where it goes.
And
yeah, for sure.
Before we wrap up, are there any plans for the rest of the year, really? And we're getting ready for next year, or is it just sort of getting the head back in the game, getting ready for it?
Yeah, so I think I'm in a good place mentally now. I think I am ready to kind of crack on. Need to start training again, to be honest, get back in shape. I don't put on weight at all. It's ridiculous. I've done kind of what I wanted the last 6 months, and I've put on 2 kilos to what I was in season. So not too worried about that. I don't know if that's a problem or not that I can't put weight on like that, but I'll get back in shape. And it's hard to say at the moment, because it's in season, all the managers and stuff are busy with all that going on. So I think towards the end of the year, I'll have more of an idea of what I'm going to be doing. And I think for sure, towards the end of this year, I'll be back in a car, whatever it'll be, with a game plan and crack on from there. I'm kind of looking forward to it, to be honest.
Yeah. No, as someone who took a year out as well, I think, I personally, for me, it was one of the best things I ever did in my career. I was back on the bike for the first time last weekend, and honestly felt faster than ever before, just because I think you clear your head up and you sort of, that step back can really give you a lot of perspective about things.
Yeah.
So to be honest, man, I think it's not a bad thing. So yeah, no, good luck for the rest of this year, and good luck for getting something sorted for 2022.
We appreciate that. Yeah, I completely agree with your point, to be honest. I mean, I've been racing every year since 2010, 2009, what am I on about? So it's been flat out for 10 or so years, and it is nice to kind of clear your head. And I think I've definitely become a lot better person from it. And I think I appreciate what I was doing a lot more than I did before. Because when you're in the moment, you think this is just so normal, when it's not normal racing F3 around all these cool tracks with your mates, because I know a lot of them anyway. So it's made me a lot more hungry, and I really appreciate what I was doing before now. So I think when I get back on track, it'll be a whole different story.
No, it's been another level for me. So and that was sort of last year I didn't, due to my dad has a lung condition. So we just took last year, nothing, no travel. Yeah. And that's kind of the mentality I got. I felt very clear headed and very hungry for it again.
Yeah.
And then getting back on track last weekend, everything was confirmed again. And it was like, oh yes. We can
that's,
do this.
That's good to hear then.
So you're on the right path. But me and Jay would say, you know, everybody needs to go check you out on Twitch. Following that. And you know, massive thank you for coming on tonight.
I appreciate it, guys. I like what you've got going on here. I think it's a good move. Podcasting's huge at the moment, and there's not a lot of motorsport ones out there. So all the best for that, and obviously both of you with your racing as well. I'm sure I'll see you guys around.
Yes. Soon. You will for sure.
And thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
No, thanks for coming on. Cheers, everyone. We'll catch you on the next one.